Okay. So, Kisisa is in and of itself one of the most theologically intense parshiyos in the Torah. It is very,
Recording
very
in
complex.
progress.
What goes up and down is the parsha is tremendously intense. And with all of that, this aliyah specifically, and also the next one, are at the center of the intensity. The aftermath of the Chet HaEgel and the conversation between Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a part of which happens in this aliyah, revolve around very fundamental ideas of how God runs the world and his attributes. And that is a very mysterious topic. And Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch, in his introduction to this aliyah and the next, he goes into a whole speech about how this is one of the most difficult sections of the Torah to interpret properly, and that we have to come with great trepidation towards understanding and translating the Psukim, and they are, by their very nature, beyond us, and the themes are beyond us, but we do our best. So try to work from somewhat of a pshat level, and also to consider the many ideas that Chazal and the later Svarim have seen contained within these psukim, and hopefully HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us siyata dishmaya and should forgive our mistakes. And that's really the theme of a lot of parsha to begin with, and we'll do the best we can to try to glean some of what these psukim are telling us. So it begins, the whole aliyah is only a few psukim, but these psukim are very intense. There's a lot to say about them. So we're told first, Pasuk Yud Beis here in Parag Lamed Gimel, V'yomer Moshe al Hashem, Re'eh ata omer Eloi, Ha'alas am hazeh. So you told me to bring up these people. V'yata lo hatani eis asher tishlach imi, V'yata amarta, So here, you haven't told us, he says, you haven't let me know who's going to come with us, and yet you have said about me, Moshe, that I know you by your name, and that I have found chen with you. So this notion of es asher tishalach imi, that's apparently a reference to a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that I'm going to send a malach with you. Anochi malach. Rashi quotes this pasuk from Perichot Gimel Pasuk Chav. But Rashi tells us that Moshe is saying that it doesn't count because that's not what I want. And Moshe is saying that he wants HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself to accompany him. What's Karav and there's Naim Torah understands that his point is that he doesn't just want to be protected, he doesn't just want to be saved in war, but he wants a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that he's drawing on the fact that here Moshe himself had offered that I'll sacrifice myself and my legacy for the Jewish people, that you can erase me, but that hasn't been the choice, so I want a relationship with you. And I don't want it to be the malach. I want to be connected to you specifically. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam understands differently than Rashi and other Rishonim that it's not necessarily about the malach, but it's that Moshe had already achieved great kirvos, great closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and now he wants to use this opportunity. He sees a Pesach to learn more. So what is going to come now, the questions and the interactions that are going to follow, that is what Moshe is trying to build upon and saying, you've already told me that they're an Am She'orev, so I want to understand your ways. I want to know how to lead them. I want to know how to handle them. So the next pasuk continues on this theme of Chen, Beata imna matzasi chein beinecha. If, yes, I have found the chein in your eyes. Here's a very key line. Hodieni nas drachecha. Show me your ways. Be'edacha. And I will know you. L'man emsa chein beinecha, so that I can find chein in your eyes. Re'ei ki amcha ha'vehezeh. And consider that this nation is your nation. So here, the Rishonim have many different understandings of what Moshe is asking when this key line of Hodieni Nas Drachecha from Onkelos sounds like he's saying, show me your ways so that I can get compassion from you. And Ibn Ezra emphasizes that the only way to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is through his midos, and that is Moshe's goal here. And the Rambam notes that that's why the pasuk concludes with so that I can find, or continues with, so that I can find chayin with you, because this is the real way to find the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chayin, not through tainus or tefillah, as important as that is. That's not the ikker, but the ikker is to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu's midos. The Akedas Yitzchak suggests that he also was thinking that maybe through this he might become worthy to be able to take the people into the land of Israel. The Bechor Shur writes that he wanted to understand enough of God's ways to know this question from the previous pasuk, where apparently there was an angel that was supposed to be leading them, and Moshe saying, I want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to lead us directly. Whether or not that was really a safe path for the Jews, and we can understand more, and that was a part of his question. The Gemara, though, has a very notable take on this. It's different. And the Gemara in Brachos and Dapsan, or the Gemara there, will refer to that Gemara a few times, because the Gemara in Dapsan and Brachos has a number of limudim and interpretations of these psukim, so that's a significant daf for us. But the Gemara understands here that the question that Moshe is asking when he says, show me your ways, is he's asking that fundamental philosophical question that has bothered philosophers, Jewish philosophers, non-Jewish philosophers, ethicists throughout history. And that is the question of, why do bad things happen to good people? Why do the righteous suffer? Why is it that there is Russia, Vitovlo, Vitzadik, Garavo? Where's the justice in the world? This is not what we think would make sense. So ultimately, we don't really have an answer to that question. And what seems to be the message of the next pasuk, depending on how you understand that, is that the way the Gemara tells us is that God says you can only see my back, you can't see my front, and that you can only understand me perhaps at best retroactively, but not in the moment. And from our perspective at this point, this is not really something that we can answer. But the Gemara does give us a little bit of an approach. And the Torah Tanima notes that can't say that this is really an answer for a number of reasons, but it's a way to try to relate to it on our level. So the Gemara suggests that maybe the tzaddikim who suffer in this world, is the difference can be drawn between a tzaddik ben tzaddik and a tzaddik ben rasha. And conversely, the rishayim who flourish in this world, the difference should be drawn between a rasha ben rasha and a rasha ben tzaddik. Or, alternatively, the tzaddik who suffers is a tzaddik she'eno gamur, who still has to pay for his flaws in this world, where his main reward is protected for him in the next world. So these are two answers that are probably related, because to say that the distinction between a tzaddik gomer and a tzaddik she'eno gomer, that's probably what we mean when we talk about a tzaddik ben rasha, because if a tzaddik ben rasha was himself a perfect tzaddik, so then it shouldn't be fair that he should have to suffer for the sins of his father. That's we're explicitly told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not poked over the avos habanim. That's not the nature of divine justice. So it wouldn't make sense to say that's the standard here. So presumably what we mean, that Tzadik ben Rasha is not fully innocent either. He's somebody who does, to a certain extent, hold on to the midos of his ancestors and still has some tikkun to do, and therefore he is flawed in that way. And that's the crucial part of what needs still to happen. So it means that Tzadik She'eino Gomer and Tzadik Ben Rasha are related concepts. Rav Kook there's a sefer called Ein Hayah, which is the thoughts of Rav Kook on the Agaditas. He published volumes on Brachos and Shabbos. And in his comments here on this Gemara, and it's also something we'll refer to a few times, so Rav Kook notes that the Tzadik Ben Rasha means that there are midos that have been inherited, that the tzaddikim who inherit them still have to overcome in this world, and whatever process they're going through is a part of tikkun of those midos. The Torah Tumima comments that this whole approach is clearly not literal, because it would come out that a Rasha ben Tzadik is better off than Tzadik ben Rasha. That can't make sense. So it's a reflection of the fact that these are efforts for us to be able to relate to these perennial questions, but don't necessarily really reflect the whole story. But this question of the difference between a Tzadik ben Rasha and a Tzadik ben Tzadik, this is a topic that actually comes up in Parshas Toldos, because there is a discussion in Halacha about when one has to choose a Shliach Tzibur. So who would best represent the Tzibur and Tefillah? In Parshas Toldos, you see that Yitzchak and Rivka are both davening. Yitzchak is a Tzadik and Tzadik, and Rivka is a Tzadik and Rasha. So how does this impact on our contemporary choices? So the Bach and the Marshal wrote that one should look for a Tzadik ben Tzadik as the Shliach Tzibur. But the Taz writes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was looking for our spirit, Rachmana Libavoy. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin that God wants the heart. And the Baal Tshuva, someone who comes from a more complex background, is going to make special efforts to overcome that. And perhaps that should be an even better choice for Shliach Tzibur. In the Mishkan B'Tzal, the Drashus, the B'Tzal Dinsky, so he suggests that the idea of preferring a Tzadik ben Tzadik, that would only be if mamish everything else was equal, if they were completely equal in all other ways. So then maybe there's a notion that Tzadik ben Tzadik is able to invoke the schus of his ancestors, and that's a slight edge. But otherwise, the schus of overcoming the background that Tzadik ben Rasha has to do is probably a big schus. It's probably a greater advantage. And that's something which should be highlighted. Maybe that's a better candidate for the Baal Tefillah. There is a very interesting point here that Rosh Hashanah Fal Hirsch and Rebecca Kamenetsky each have their specific focus on language and on dictum. They make essentially overlapping points here, that this key phrase, Hodi'enu Na'as Dirachecha, the word Dirachecha is neither singular nor plural as far as its grammatic character here. That if it was singular, it should say darkecha and not derechecha. And if it was plural, it should have a yud. So this construct of derechecha is somewhere in between singular and plural. And they suggest that it reflects the fact, particularly relevant to these very weighty theological issues, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really one. But to us, in our perception, it's very hard to discern exactly what's going on. And it seems like things are going off in all kinds of different directions. So the paths of the Ribon Shel, they seem to us to be split, to be divergent. But in truth, they're all one. They're all one path. And that's what we struggle to appreciate. And this is itself a core point, because this is one of the main, not the main issue with Avodah Zarah. We talk about Avodah Zarah as opposed to monotheism specifically. So the very character of being monotheistic is most of the way there, because part of the problem with Avodah Zarah, that you believe in conflicting and opposing forces in the world that can fight with each other. And then you could have allegiance to one God against the next. You believe there's a good God and a bad God, and play off one against the other. So everything starts to fall apart. Specifically, that whole point of polytheism, of believing that God is many divided forces that are not unified, is one of the central issues. And here we are in the aftermath of a episode of Vatazara. So understanding that ultimately God is unified, and that his drachim may seem plural, but really it's one derech, is very core to what's going on here. So this notion of the pasuk continues about leman emtzachein. So we see chein repeated again and again in this pasuk and throughout this brief aliyah. Chein, chein, chein tialano. So why is there so much chein? So the Laharis Nasan emphasized with Nasan Gestetner in his comments on Chumash that he wants to know the chein. Chein is the idea of grace, sort of translated, and it reflects the fact that one finds favor, it's not necessarily deserved. There's something a person does which earns them extra favor from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's a little bit of a complex idea, because sometimes it suggests that it's really undeserved. And when Moshe is associated with chein, requires us to understand that the kind of the usage. So we know Noach was associated with chein. Noach's name is chein backwards. And the Torah tells us that Noach matzah chein. And Chazal understand that that's actually an insult, so to speak, or it's a little bit of a criticism that Noach was saved from the flood, even though he wasn't really deserving. But he matzah chein, he found chein, and therefore he was able to be favored, so to speak. But at the same time, there is a suggestion, literature there and elsewhere, that there are things that one does positively that earns them chein if a person is an anav, like Moshe Rabbeinu, anav mikol adam, person who learns Torah, the Gemara connects to chein. So it's a little bit of a complex point. Chein is something which, on the one hand, is apparently undeserved, but it's not coming randomly. It's coming because of midos and activities that deserve it. So it's somewhere in between, that it reflects it's more than one deserves. And when somebody asks for chein, it's their way of saying that I'm not demanding this because I believe I deserve it. And as the Gra notes, that what Moshe is saying now is that he is trying to phrase his request with the recognition that I'm asking for something big, something above and beyond. And as we look towards Purim, it's evocative of Esther and how Esther talks to Achashverosh. And as the Nitziv comments here, that the derech of tzaddikim is that they don't try to invoke their own schus. And they, when they ask for something, they don't say, give it to me, I deserve it. They say, this is something that I don't deserve. This is something above and beyond. But I'm asking for you to perhaps please bestow it upon me. So the next pasuk is the shortest pasuk in the short aliyah, and one of the most mysterious. So what's going on here? Very hard to understand, but the pasuk just says, "V'yomer." God says, "Panai elechu v'hanichosi lach." So how do you translate that? So "hanichosi lach," I'll give you rest. I'll give you what you want. What does "panai elechu" mean? So there are various interpretations that are shown here. Some of them are conflicting with each other. If you look at Rashi here, so Rashi says, "Kesar gumo," like it's translated, "Lo eshachad malach ani ba'atzmi elech." So, okay, you want me to come myself, and not the malach, so okay, we'll accompany you. There are Rishonim who understand it in the completely opposite sense, that he says, no, I'm going away from you, I'm leaving you alone, and I'm not going to come with you. So it's very difficult to interpret on that level. And the Gemara, with Aaron Brachos again, the Gemara has a whole different interpretation here, a completely different level of interpretation, that the Gemara says, it's a reference to his katz, to his anger, and he's saying, let my anger pass, and then I'll do what you want. And the Gemara derives from here that al yiratzeh b'shas kaiso, a person should not try to calm somebody down in their moment of greatest anger, which is also a Mishnah in the fourth parak of Pirkei Avos. A person shouldn't try to calm down somebody who's in a state of anger. So this is apparently derived from this pasuk. It's a different level of interpretation that that's what's going on. So the question why that is, what's the problem in trying to calm down somebody who's angry or in their moment of particular anger? So Rashi, in his commentary to Pirkei Avos, over there in the fourth part, Rashi says, it's just not going to work. It's futile. You shouldn't try. And the Rambam, in Hilchos Deis, in Parakei, Halacha Zayin, the Rambam understands this to be one of the midos of Talmid Chachamim. And the various things he lists there that are part of the attributes, part of the qualities of Talmid Chachamim, that you should only say things that are effective. And that's not effective. It's not going to get you anywhere. There's a sefer called Birchas Chayin on the Maseches Brachos by Rabbi Fink, and there the Gemara notes that here the Rambam is associating this with Talmid Chachamim, but it doesn't sound like that from the Gemara. The Gemara sounds like this is a rule for everybody. And you notice also that the Gemara in this whole passage mentions it twice in Zayin of Aleph and Zayin of Beis, and he suggests that it's to make two points. That one, it's a statement of reality, that it's not going to work. And two, that the Samida, Talmid Chachamim are aware of what's effective and what's not. And they're careful to only say things that are going to make a difference, that are going to be effective. So Talmid Chachamim, they notice this. They are aware that this is something that's not going to be productive. The Tiferes Yisrael writes that you're just going to make the person angrier. You're going to aggravate them further if you try to calm them down at this moment. And therefore, it's a bad idea. And Rabbi Yonah comments that you're going to make the person say things that are worse. He's already saying he's going to be so provoked in his anger that he's going to say things that are problematic and it's going to be your fault. The Sukkot David, a more recent sefer, David Kfiat, was one of the Rebbeim in the year, passed away a few years ago. So in his commentary to Pirkei Avos, so he suggests that what's going on here, the reason we're told not just that it's futile, but you shouldn't do it, is because you'll miss your opportunity. You'll try to say something which maybe later on could have worked, but now you'll say it when it's not going to be productive, and then it's not going to be productive later either, because you already fell flat. And therefore, it's not just hopeless, but it's counterproductive. Major Shmuel, in his commentary, wrote that this would be a violation of the behavior. You're going to provoke the person to be angrier when you could have done the opposite. So it's a problem of being machshel someone. That's a fascinating statement, because that's a whole discussion in general. In the Sefer Halacha, there's a lot written about this, about the notion of Lufneiva, that we're not supposed to entrap or enable people to do Averos and put them in situations where they're going to be able to commit an Avera or prompted to. So what if it's something that's an issue of Midos? So maybe we should say that there's Lufneiva there as well. If you're going to prompt someone to behave in a non-Midostic fashion, so is that something we have to worry about? So there's an interesting literature about that. Comes up in some interesting context. Let's say an employer wants to test out his employees to see if they're going to be loyal to him, or somebody on a date does things or says things to see what kind of reaction he'll get so that he can see what the person is like. So there's discussion about that. Is that an issue of Lufneiva, if you're going to evoke a reaction that is not consistent with good midos? So here the concern that you're going to make the person even angrier by trying to calm them down at an inappropriate time. So perhaps that's of the same spirit. So it's interesting, all these suggestions that might be true when dealing with a flawed human being, but here we're talking about a Kadosh Baruch Hu. This is all derived from a Kadosh Baruch Hu himself. So how much does any of this apply that we just mentioned? Rav Kook, in his comments here, is trying to make a point that the Gemara is telling us, that everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in this world has a place, including Kas. Kas also has a place, even though the Rambam writes in Hilchos Deis that Kas is one of the only two midos, that you should not go for the midah benedis, you shouldn't go for the middle path, but that you should try to avoid in the absolute. You should try to stay extremely far away from. But nonetheless, it could be that when properly expressed in recognition of a situation that calls for it, so kas has a place, and that what is being conveyed here is that you shouldn't try to cut it short, that the anger needs to happen, it needs to express itself appropriately, and then after that there is something that perhaps could be accomplished. And if that's the case, this would be maybe a direct parallel to what's also mentioned there. The Mishnah says that we don't try to comfort somebody when a person loses a relative, Rachman al-Islam, so Nicham Avelim is a crucial mitzvah, but only after the Kura. And when the person is still waiting to bury their relative, so that's not the right time to attempt Nicham Avelim. This is a real halacha that people are not always aware of or careful about. Sometimes they gather for a funeral and the family's there and they express Nichumim. It's really not the time for Nichumim. It's not what we're at yet. So here it has a parallel also. So what's so terrible? So on the one hand, one could suggest that it's not going to work. You're just not going to be able to comfort somebody when the loss is so fresh. Anything you're saying at that point is just going to fall flat. It's like trying to calm down somebody who's angry at the moment of intensity. So that's not going to be appropriate. While you could say that it's not just a question of it not being effective, but it's a question of it's just the wrong time, that there's a time for Nichum, and it's kind of an insult to the mace to say before the funeral has even happened that, okay, we should move on, we should be able to kind of get over it, and the person hasn't even been buried yet. So this parallels the interpretations here. Are we talking about something which is simply ineffective, and then we have to understand why is this being brought up in the context of the Kodesh Baruch Hu? The Litzkarav, as Nayim Latova writes, that Hashem was teaching the concept that we find in some other places as well, that he's teaching us how to act, even when it doesn't necessarily involve concepts that are relevant to him specifically, or maybe to highlight the fact that the pass is necessary for the recipient, and then maybe it's appropriate that Tzach, the author of the Nevi Yehuda, he writes that Shas Kaso doesn't necessarily even mean the person actually is angry. It means at the time when it's appropriate or it's reasonable for him to be angry, it's still a fresh outrage, and you could expect that somebody would be worked up. So even if the person is very calm and controlled, still to try to address it and to move past it at that point, maybe it's simply inappropriate. So Silberstein has a discussion about this in his Chashuk Yechemet, that a difference between some of the various approaches here is whether this is just an Eitz Tova or is it really some kind of an Avera. Is this just good advice, or is this a way of actually telling you what you must and mustn't do? And he thought a nafkamina would be if you should stop somebody else who's trying to do it. If somebody else is going to make this effort, so should you interfere and stop them? Or is that something that may not be the mitzvah that you normally would exhibit, but it's not necessarily something that you would have to get involved in addressing in others? Okay, so the next pasuk tells us the Yomer love. So Moshe says back to him, "Im ein panecha holchem al taleinu mizeh." So if your face is not traveling, so then don't pick us up from here. So here again, it's very difficult to know what's going on here. Rashi says, "Bizal ani chayfetz ki al yidei malach al taleinu mizeh." This is what I want. I don't want to be brought up by the malach. So that's complex because depending on how you understand the previous pasuk, so Kadosh Baruch Hu just said, okay, I'm going to give you what you want. So why is Moshe still pushing the point? This is something the Ramban deals with and others. Sifsei Chachamim writes over here that Moshe was conveying his love for Kadosh Baruch Hu and saying that if you're not going to forgive us, then we wouldn't want to proceed. We wouldn't want to go on without you. Maram Shik was one of the great students of the Chassam Sofer, and he wrote Shuvas and other things. And they came out a few years ago with Sharm al-Torah from the Torah of Imam Sheikh. So Imam Sheikh writes over here that if we're not going to have a malach, which was his request, so then there's going to be a need for more ishtadlis on the part of the people. So Moshe is asking for more help. And the Rav Soloveitchik, in the volume that was released a number of years ago, where he talks about the leadership of Moshe and Yosef, Soloveitchik understood that originally Moshe thought that the malach was okay, but now after the Chet HaEgel, so now we need chesed, and only HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself can be able to express chesed. That's an interesting approach. It's different than the Tzach. The Tzach in his commentary of Tzach and Mendaf and Zayin, Tzach writes that the malach is actually partially about chesed. So it's different than whoever Soloveitchik was expressed in here. So then the final pasuk of this challenging aliyah, Moshe says, "Uvameh yivada ifo ki matzasi chen benecha ani benecha." Hello, belechtuchi maru. How am I going to know that I have found favor in your eyes? The Jewish people have found favor in your eyes. Only if you go with us. Hello, belechtuchi maru. But if we do, ani ve'amcha bekol ha'am asher al pnei ha'adama. And I will be different. We will be different. Your nation will be different from all the other nations of the world. So here, the same Gemara in Brachos and Daf Zayin tells us, and Rashi quotes it, that Moshe was asking something very specific here, a two-part question. One, that the Shechina should rest on the Jewish people, but also not on the Ummah Sa'olam, not on the other nations of the world. So that's very difficult to understand. Is this some selfish desire to hoard the Shechina? What does that mean, that the Shechina should be only on us and not on the others? So here, this is something that Rav Kook talks about also, and that Maharam Shik as well, the same drasha, that maybe, on the one hand, you could say that maybe this is a part of the whole notion of keeping the Shechina, that when he's saying that the Shechina should return to us, saying it shouldn't be on the other nations is a part of that, it should be with us specifically. But there's additional elements here as well, so if Cook noted that this is not selfish, this is on behalf of the world. That here the Jews are supposed to be leading the world to the ultimate wisdom. And in order for that to be effective, so they have to be clearly the ones receiving the Shechina exclusively. And if the other nations of the world were also experiencing the divine presence, so that would be a distraction that would undermine the whole message that's being conveyed through the Jewish people and their relationship with the Kadosh Baruch. And that's a point that the Maharam Shik makes as well, that it should be clear what it is that's bringing the Shechina. It's not black magic, it's not superstition, it's not other approaches that the nations of the world are utilizing, but it's specifically the Jewish people and their mitzvos and their connection with God. The Tshuvas Kanaf Renana is written about 100 or so years ago, the Shuvas Kanaf Renana in his Hakdama to Shuvas on Yerudeya. So he talks about the whole notion of Yerudeya and how we can be taught about knowledge, about Das, about Shalom. And he writes there that we only know God through his mitzvot, not through other techniques. So this is consistent with what Moshe is saying throughout the Aliyah, that I want to know your ways, I want to understand what you're about, that's the Iker. And that one shouldn't think that the other approaches that the rest of the world may take, that that is a equally or even remotely comparable or possible path to try to understand the Ribbono Shel Olam. So all of this is of a piece with the various requests that Moshe is making throughout this Aliyah, And like you said, it's very intense and theologically complex. So we don't actually know what happened here in this interaction as far as its deepest meaning, but we do the best we can through our Mishnabos to try to understand and to appreciate. And we recognize the key point that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was understood through his Midos and through his Torah, and that our effort is to maintain that, is to keep our understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the highest level possible, and through the only path possible of trying to comprehend and to follow his mitzvos, which teach us about his essence. And the more we are able to comprehend about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way in the world, the better we will be able to serve him and not stumble, God forbid, in the way that the Jewish people did in this parasha. So a lot to learn, a lot to consider and think about in this incredibly intense parasha of Kisisa. I hope that you all have uplifting and elevating Shabbos as you ponder the themes and the concepts in this very challenging and very deep parsha. And Baruch Hashem, I will see you afterwards.